All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we've got Dustin Gubberlow with the North Dakota Watchdog Network. He's also newly on Substack. I'll let him plug that in just a moment, but we're going to talk about a news story that he got picked up on because, like us over at the Crude Life and ESG University, we work with other media outlets, and we seem to lately, Dustin, I don't know about you, but I seem to be getting more media requests for our content that I think I've had in my last 20 to 25 years in this business. So first of all, congratulations on continuing the relationship with other media outlets. And second, happy holidays. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Been a busy day, doing all sorts of calls and not necessarily getting done what I needed to get done, but I got some stuff done.
Well, that's good. That's good. One of the calls, of course, was with KX News. Of course, KX News is a statewide news network for the state of North Dakota and the North Dakota Watchdog Network, Dustin Gubberlow. And what is that Substack page real quick?
Well, if you go to watchingnd.com, it forwards directly to our Substack. I've turned the Substack into our Watchdog webpage. So basically everything that you need to know is there. I'm still in the process of migrating over some of the old emails, but I've got quite a few of them going back all the way to 2014 now.
And one of the stories that you've been following is this the Clean and Sustainable Energy Authority, which that is about the most Orwellian name I've ever heard for an authority task force in today's day and age. The Clean and Sustainable Energy Authority. I mean, could they fit any more buzzwords into that bag there, Dustin? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to editorialize, but it caught me off guard there. So let's talk about this article, unless you want to comment on that name like I just did.
Well, that was actually discussed during the legislative session back in 2021 when this authority was created. You know, because
I am being snarky for a reason. Thank you. Okay, good.
Yeah, you weren't the only one. And so these things were fought over last session when the legislature decided to create this fund and the authority to manage the fund. They moved $100 million over from the legacy fund, as well as creating a long-term $40 million annual appropriation from the legacy fund. And now, as we talked about a little bit last week on our first podcast, and as I've sent out a few emails regarding this, the governor has proposed in his executive budget $500 million over the next two bienniums be plugged into that, so that that fund can have all sorts of money that it wants to put into whatever it wants. The KX picked up the angle of the story, which is the fact that we got a hold of some emails between Lad Erickson and the Empower ND Commission, which
who's Lad Erickson and who's Empower? Is that right? Empower?
Yes.
Okay. Explain those two real quick.
So Lad Erickson is the state's attorney for McLean County, I believe, and he has taken the lead on the anti-wind movement in McLean and Mercer County over the last 5 or 6 years. There was some ordinances passed by Oliver County, Mercer County, and McLean County, I believe, that were targeting the limitation of the wind power because the PSC was not doing it, because the PSC was basically approving everything, because for the last 20 years, the Republican Party energy policy was the all of the above energy policy. And in the last 3 or 4 years, that has changed. The forces within the party and in the lobbying ranks of the energy business have decided that that all of the above energy policy of bringing in more mostly wind and a little bit of solar has now put traditional energy at a disadvantage. And they want to see this Clean and Sustainable Energy Fund actually used to prop up the traditional energy sources rather than being used to transition over to the new energy sources. And during the last session, when I opposed this under the North Dakota Watchdog banner, we brought up the question of whether this was really going to be used for green energy or whether this was just a ruse and that it was actually going to be used for propping up the coal industry, because there were other bills last session that specifically sent money to the coal industry that cut their industry tax without cutting the subsidies that they get from those taxes. And it appears that the industry itself has decided that they would like to just eliminate the any sort of ruse that this is a clean energy fund and simply use it to prop up what is existing out there. So to answer your other question about what is Empower, that is a commission that it is appointed by the governor. It essentially operates underneath the Commerce Department, I believe. It's existed since the 90s under Ed Schaefer. And it's designed to act as kind of a clearinghouse for any sort of energy-related interests in North Dakota. And they have, I think it's either monthly or every other week, calls where they discuss things. And a few months ago, actually, it's been probably 2 months since I got my hands on this email chain where members of the Empower Commission were talking with Lad Erickson about this draft where they explicitly want to cross off the portions of the Century Code where the fund and the authority are dedicated towards promoting clean energy, and specifically say that it will be used to support existing coal, oil, and agriculture in North Dakota, and explicitly not be used to fund the transition to the replacement of those traditional energy sources.
What I don't understand about this Clean Sustainable Energy Authority is I don't really understand what they do. Okay, now let me explain that, because I thought what the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority was supposed to do, I thought there was four or five other organizations within the state government that was supposed to take care of this stuff.
Well, they needed another one, apparently, because in North Dakota,
totally
we like to
serious,
duplicate government.
Dustin, because it seems like the chamber is the same thing as economic development now. All mm-hmm. these little subgroups, this is run by Al Anderson. Al Anderson is the former commerce director who was appointed by Senator Hoeven or John Hoeven and Dalrymple. So this tell me how this is any different than what they created with the chamber. I'm sorry, with the Commerce Department. Because as far as I can see, the Commerce Department is turning into a venture capital firm for a group of people in North Dakota. And that's what this seems to be as well, Steve. I'm sorry, as well, Dustin.
Yeah,
sorry, I got my shows confused here. I'm on so many these days. Sorry.
I know you are. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of overlap. I think that in a lot of ways, so looking at the voting members of the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority, you've got...
Now,
Lieutenant
who are
Governor,
they? Let me pull that up here. Okay, go ahead. Keep talking. Sorry.
Lieutenant Governor Sanford is the chairman.
He's pretty fair.
You've got Joel Brown of the Western Dakota Energy Association.
Yeah, I like Joel.
You got Christopher Fries and Robert McLennan of the Lignite Energy Council.
Okay, I'm not familiar with either one of them, but their titles tell me where they stand.
You've got Jim Arthaud and Kathy Nesset of the Oil and Gas Research Council.
Okay, that's and Kathy would also cover wind, because Nesset is very active in wind. And by the way, they don't talk about that around North Dakota.
Right.
The Oil Man magazine did a feature story. I was actually the cover story January this year on for the Oil Man magazine because of my you know 10 years of work and the you know all energy is good energy and we don't close our doors on anybody, we accept everybody, right? And they wanted to paint that as the new face of energy and oil and gas and all this stuff like that. And I kind of chuckled, but at the same time, hey, it was a good accolade. But anyway, inside that same edition was a big story on Nesset, how they got into wind. So Kathy would also represent wind energy from my perspective. I don't know if you agree with that, Dustin, but
I certainly would agree with that. And then
okay.
from the Renewable Energy Council, Al Christensen and Terry Gorger.
Christensen. Now, I'm not familiar with him. And oh, Terry Gorger, wasn't he an old corn guy?
Couldn't tell you. I don't know the name offhand.
Okay. I think he comes from agriculture. Yeah. Okay.
And then the technical non-voting advisors are interesting as well. Okay. Charles.
By the way, I can't find this. Where are you finding this board? I'm looking for it.
If you Google North Dakota Clean Sustainable Energy Authority.
No, I'm on the Industrial Commission's page of it. But
on the far left-hand side, membership.
Okay. Go on. Sorry.
So then you get Charles Gorecki of the State Energy Research Center.
Why does it say membership? That makes it sound like it's a chamber. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's created by the legislature, and then the members are appointed by the governor. So it is a board authority. So you got Lynn Helms. They still got James Lehman listed for Department of Commerce. I believe he's gone there.
Oh, I think he still draws a check, doesn't he? Seriously, he's still listed as an employee with the Department of Commerce. So I think he still draws a check. You got to remember, James Lehman, he's probably drawing a check from Minnesota still. Okay, yeah. He was drawing a check from the University of Crookston and the state of North Dakota, I believe, at the same time, which I don't think you're supposed to do that. But you know as well as I do, the state of North Dakota, there's a certain group of people, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, there definitely is. Then you got John Weida of the North Dakota Transmission Authority, Dave Glott of the Department of Environmental Quality.
Okay, these are all the same names that are on all the different groups. If you go to any organization or any council, these are all the same names that sit on all the same councils. That's what I'm saying. How is this any different than
they have a piggy bank. They have a piggy bank. That's the difference.
This is an incredible circle. So somebody's listening to this, right, over ESG University, or maybe on the Watchdog Substack, or maybe on the Crude Life, or you know, maybe on some other podcast, or listening to something like this. What can they do? What are they supposed to do?
Well, right now, we're setting up for a pretty big fight, I believe, in the legislature starting in January. You're going to have three factions. You're going to have the faction that supports Burgum's vision of using this for clean, sustainable energy. You're going to have the faction that wants to use this money for propping up coal and traditional energy. And then you're going to have the third faction, which is the conservative faction, and probably the smallest faction, which is going to oppose using it for either purpose, because the idea of taking $500 million over the next 4 years out of a legacy fund and using it for either of these purposes is going to turn a lot of people off. And frankly, you might even see Democrats opposed to this because they're not necessarily on the clean side of it. They're not necessarily going to be supportive of the way that Burgum wants to use it, or the unions might not even like it because they may not see that there's enough in it for them. So this is going to become, you know, one of those big, big fights this session. And frankly, the question is if the fund and the authority and the purpose is not specifically for what Burgum wants, which is the clean, green energy, I call it Doug Burgum's Green New Deal, would he then actually pull support for the $500 million? Because he can't guarantee that the legislature is going to put it where he wants it. And so would he actually withdraw his support and oppose it if they don't make sure that it operates the way that he intends it to?
Are these guys even working? I mean, Charles Gorecki, this guy sits on 15 boards. How can he even do his job full time? Justin Kringstead. I mean, seriously, I'm looking at these names and I'm going, I can name 15 other boards that these guys sit on. So half their time is traveling to going to these meetings because they don't even do them on Teams half the time now. You go to social media and you can take a look at the linen, the nice linen and catered meals that they have at all their different board meetings and things like that. So this is, I didn't even know this existed, by the way, like this. I knew it, there was an organization, but I didn't realize that all these members were involved. So this is an incredible exercise in groupthink today. Holy smokes, Dustin, what's going on?
It is, and it's a duplication, and they've got a...
It's a reduplication. That's how much of a redo it is. It's a Stephon Marbury reduplication.
And the irony, the great irony is, wasn't Doug Burgum's number two or number three plank efficiency in government? Wouldn't it be more efficient to just collapse all these things into one? They all do the same thing. So why not simply collapse them into one entity and let them really be a thing? You know, if you notice in that membership, and this was one of the oppositions in the discussion when this was approved last session, the name of the entity is Clean Sustainable Energy, but there's only two people there on that list of voting members that has eight voting members that are actually representing renewable energy. The rest of them are traditional energy. So it is very logical and reasonable as to why the members of this organization want to actually use the money for propping up their industries, because they don't represent the clean and sustainable energy industry. They represent the existing. And so we've got, you know, the inmates running the asylum in this situation, because you've got a governor who appoints both the members of the Empower Commission and the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority, but yet those members in both boards aren't necessarily on the same page as him, and they're working with a county state's attorney, colluding with a county state's attorney to develop language for bills to hijack what the legislature and the governor intended this thing to do. And the governor wants to give him $500 million more. I mean, this is like a Keystone Cops situation.
This is remarkable. I mean, I'm taking a look at this, and this to me is another way to block the free market. This is another way to block innovation. This is another way to block smart, clever capitalists trying to figure out ways to reduce emissions out in the oil field. This is the way that they're trying to block smart, clever capitalists from coming in and trying to reduce the carbon footprint by creating sustainable systems. There's seriously, I don't think there's one person on this entire list that's ever built anything sustainable. Every single person on this list that I'm aware of relies on government subsidies for their existence.
Yes.
I'm serious. Tell me if I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. And in fact, in Governor Burgum's speech a week and a half ago, the line was, this infusion, along with $50 million for grants through the fund, will support clean energy projects such as carbon capture, which represents a path forward for baseload coal through innovation over regulation. So he's touting the idea of innovation over regulation, but the entire program is designed to make sure that things happen the way the government wants them to, and getting the free market to do what the government wants, which is what caused this whole problem, you know, with the federal government putting out the credits and tax programs and the 45Q and everything else that they have. They caused a lot of these problems for North Dakota by trying to distort the energy economy. And now North Dakota is going to take the legacy fund money and try to fight the federal government fire with fire. Well, guess what? The state of North Dakota can't win that fight. We can spend all the money that we want, and we can spend the entire legacy fund. We're not going to win that war with the federal government.
I apologize to Jim Arthod. You are an entrepreneur, and you are the only one on the list that has created something sustainable. You know Jim Arthod out in Western North Dakota?
I sure do.
Yeah,
sure
Billings do. County. He's one of the 800 members of Billings County, and like 50% of them are millionaires out there.
Yeah.
So funny when you look at that county, it's got like the highest net worth. That and like Fallon County in Montana or something like that. You got these two just random high counties, low population, high net worth, and they're, you know, it's oil and gas. But so anyway, I just wanted to make sure I pointed that out, because I saw that Jim Arthod was on that list. Yeah.
And back in 2014, Jim Arthod was one of the first people in North Dakota to scream about how the legislature and the governor need to wake up, because the oil market was crashing and it was going to be very, very painful. There were two people, Eugene Grainer and Jim Arthod, that were screaming as early as October of 2014 that it was going to be a problem. And Jim Arthaud had been Governor Dalrymple's campaign chairman at that point, or maybe he was Hovind's campaign chairman, one or the other. No, he was Dalrymple's campaign chairman, saying the governor's not paying attention at the time. I mean, that, you know, it's pretty dangerous for people in positions like his to say the governor's not paying attention. Now, he probably was one of the few people that could get away with it as well, but he was definitely right then. And you're right. He's the only one on that list that actually knows what's going on in the private market, because all these other entities are just really taking credit for what the market is doing and then trying to manipulate it with government money.
Of course, Jim Arthaud sold MBI shortly around that time as well. So, yeah, sharp guy, saw the handwriting on the wall and, you know, took action and responded accordingly. And it's interesting that they didn't even listen to him. You're right. But when I look at really what's happening, is the way that I saw Burgum operate was kind of that Silicon Valley economy, where every 3 to 5 years you need an infusion of cash. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is, when you got to a certain point, you had to create a nonprofit or two to run your day to day. So what happened was, is in the same way that the Democratic Party created the Rock the Vote template, to where Rock the Vote became a day to day, you know, social media and writing press releases and doing that administrative type work for the Democratic Party, which is all documented. Okay. That's happening in North Dakota in a lot of different ways. Okay. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I'm starting to see that more and more, where a lot of these politicians, and I'm not saying Jim Arthaud is doing this by any means, because he's the last entrepreneur on this list. Everyone else seems to have like one or two of these nonprofits that run their day-to-day work. That's what I don't get,
yes.
Dustin. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Why is that being allowed? Why has Governor Burgum created that model? Let me rephrase that. Dustin, I've noticed that Senator Hovind and Doug Burgum use that Joe Biden Rock the Vote, Democratic Vote template, where they have these nonprofits that they act as entrepreneurs or they act as economic development, but they're completely funded by tax dollars and they work directly for, it seems, their interests. And there's a 10-year body of work to point it out. And I look forward to pointing that out with you next year, but talk to me a little bit about that Rock the Vote template that the Democrats created that there's now people in North Dakota using, because this is an example of that.
Yeah, it there definitely is a model that uses government and nonprofits to push an agenda. And frankly, I believe that it's because that Doug Burgum has realized that there is not that much money in North Dakota, and there's not a lot of outside money that truly wants to come to North Dakota. If you look at the fight over Fufang and the Bill Gates buying the farmland, whether you agree with it or not, it doesn't help our stated goal of attracting money to North Dakota if every time outside money wants to invest in North Dakota, half the state picks up their pitchforks and torches and screams bloody murder. That doesn't help money come here. That doesn't help the economy grow. Now, those particular projects may not be good, but the mentality that outside money is bad is a pervasive and longstanding mentality. You go anytime there's an initiated measure, if it's got outside money, it's automatically declared to be evil. Basically, it's anything that's outside North Dakota is considered to be, you know, a recolonization of sorts, which is funny because, you know, conservatives used to be against the NPL, which was created to fight against those outside interests, and now they've become it as far as fighting those interests. And a guy like Doug Burgum, who's got his own money, who's been involved in IPOs and all sorts of business, venture capital, understands that outside money doesn't actually want to come here. And so the only way that there really is going to be a new economy built in North Dakota is by using government money, which is not a position that the people of North Dakota or the vast majority of elected officials actually support.
Have you seen this Good Life program he wants $25 to $50 million for?
Yep.
So we've actually gone through it. We entered into it. I've been taking screenshots and documented the whole time, and I look forward to our podcast on the Good Life and our feature on ESGU about it, because right now I'm at job service through this, the Good Life, and oh my word, this is an exercise in propaganda and Orwellian behavior that I've ever seen, because they through this whole process, Dustin, they haven't literally wanted to know one thing about me. The only thing they do is they tell me where to go, where to spend my money, and what to think. This whole process. I mean, it is unbelievable. And I look forward to working with you and also possibly a newspaper in Bismarck as well on this. We're in talks with a couple media outlets in Bismarck on this Good Life story, because the governor's asking for, I think, $25 million. He wants $60 or $50 million to promote the state because of what you just said. There isn't anybody who really wants to come and do business here. They had to give Harold Hamm all kinds of state money. Otherwise, he was going to leave. Am I wrong? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I mean, they had to give him pandemic money, and they had to give him, what's that, 4Q money? What's that?
45Q for the carbon pipeline money. And yep. On top of that, we cut the gross receipts tax for oil from 11.5% to 10% to keep Harold Hamm happy.
And Kevin Cramer gave him a bunch of that federal regrow money too.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's four different subsidies they had to give Harold Hamm for him to stick around. You're right, mm-hmm. man. I mean, think about that. That's how difficult it is to do business in the state of North Dakota. Harold Hamm, they broke Harold Hamm down to taking government subsidies, even during a pandemic. My goodness. I still can't believe that. But
part of it had to do with his divorce. But the greater message is the fact that these companies don't really want to do business here unless there's something special for them. And we have the same problem at local government level. We have mm-hmm. Renaissance Zone. We have TIF districts. We have Pilot, Fargo, Bismarck. All of these programs are designed to give one group of people a leg up against everybody else. And that is the way that they entice them into the state, because it is pretty clear there's not enough money here to actually grow the system, and there's not enough outside money that actually wants to come here. When you look at the CNBC does these annual rankings of the states as far as economics and that sort of thing. And North Dakota is a little bit above average overall, but when it comes to access to venture capital, we're always either dead last or 49th, right behind Mississippi. Like, there's no access to capital. And that's why government feels the need to increase spending and spend all this money to prop up and subsidize and jumpstart businesses. The people, mm-hmm. the irony is that the people don't understand how unattractive North Dakota is to the outside money. And part of it is our tax climate. Part of it is the fact that there's just not a population. There's not a big market. But a big part of it is the fact that we as North Dakotans frown upon outside money because we look upon it with suspicion, like they're trying to take us over. It's like, if you remember in the 1980s, Japan was riding high and buying property in Los Angeles, and people were afraid that the Japanese were going to own California. You know, we're kind of in that mentality when it comes to anybody who comes in. And, you know, you look at the hydrogen concept for the Dakota gasification plant, which, you know, 40 years ago when that plant was built, my dad was part of the cost management team that built it. That's why we ended up in Zap and why I grew up there. The idea of converting coal into natural gas so that it would be cleaner is kind of the same concept that they are pushing here now. But the problem is natural gas is so dirt cheap that it doesn't make any sense to convert coal into natural gas anymore. So they wanted to retrofit this plant to do hydrogen and take hydrogen from natural gas and turn it into the hydrogen. And you know, if you look at the car companies, every car company except for one is going all in on electric. The one company that is not going all in on electric is Toyota. And I do think that, you know, of all the car companies that know what they're doing, Toyota's up there, either number one or number two, as far as having a track record of being able to read the tea leaves on this stuff. And if Toyota's interested in hydrogen, and if North Dakota's interested in hydrogen, there very easily could be some sort of a synergy there that is created. And maybe that's part of Doug Burgum's thinking. And it's a valid approach. The question is whether the powers that be want that to happen or not.
This hydrogen company you were speaking of, is that the one that Odney, the Department of Odney, has ownership in, or it seems like they have ownership in, with the CEO out of Jacksonville?
I believe that it is Mitsubishi Heavy Industry that is actually behind the hydrogen plant.
Bakken Energy is the one I'm talking about, right? Bakken Energy? I think that's the name of that one I'm talking
about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Could be.
Okay.
It's hard to keep track of all these different entities. They're all, you know, much like the government committees, they kind of cross-pollinate a little bit too.
Well, in closing here, Dustin, one question I have for you, because you've been covering this political circus now for quite a while, and the legislative session starts, I think, January 3rd. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Senator Hovind grew, I'm sorry, Governor Hovind, Republican, grew the North Dakota government more than any other governor before him. Dalrymple literally changed the Bank of North Dakota, the bylaws and et cetera. Burgum has grown the government beyond recognition, and he's done a lot with changing the financing with the Department of Commerce and with the bank and a few other things. My question for you is this the new Republican Party, or is there any Republicans left who are fiscally conservative, I guess, because all I see the Republicans do since Senator Hovind was a governor is spend money. That's all I've seen them do. I haven't seen any real reduction. It just seems like a cash grab.
The bulk of the Republican Party has been in favor of all these spending proposals going back to Hovind. They have stymied any sort of effort to reduce taxes. They reduce taxes when they absolutely have to. This is also why I have been very supportive of Governor Burgum's income tax proposal to flatten the income tax and then get rid of it eventually, because that would actually give the people of North Dakota a piece of the pie, finally get a dividend out of this economy for the last 15 years. And it would reduce the amount of money going forward that the government would have to spend. It's not going to go broke. There's plenty of money to go around. And, I'm sure that people look at my emails and, you know, one day I'm, supporting Burgum's income tax plan and his pension reform plan, and the next day going after the Green New Deal, because, you know, these programs.
Yeah, you're a total nut job. We all know it.
Yeah. You know, and the fact is that the idea of spending hundreds of millions of dollars to prop up any industry is not a conservative idea. Now, whether it is a legitimate idea that just has to happen, that's another discussion that we might have to have, because the lack of investment by other private entities might require it. But how much of that lack of investment is caused by the fact that the government does so much in North Dakota, that we have a Republican Party that is all for state-run socialistic industry? How much of it, is it a chicken or an egg? Does the lack of investment cause the socialism, or does the socialism cause the lack of investment?
How can people subscribe to your Substack page, Mr. Dustin Goverlow of the North Dakota Watchdog Network?
They can go to watchingnde.com, which is our Substack page, and there is a subscribe button. We offer a free version, and if you want to pay, we will certainly never turn down your money.
Of course, you can always go to esgu.org or thecrudelife.com, and we've got Substacks from there as well, and websites. Check us out. Daily content up on both. My name is Jason Spies. That is Dustin Goverlow. We'll see you next time.